something's gonna stick. Even if you're the worst developer in the world, if you're just consistent, like, something's bound to work.
People tend to use the word rapper for almost anything. What is a rapper? You know, NVIDIA can be a rapper. Everything can be a rapper. Everything is a rapper, technically.
There's no moats anymore. You can build any feature someone else does. We will succeed if the first thing people think about when they think of email is zero.
Is there a secret sauce on YouTube that people need to be made aware of?
You just have to be so consistent that it's almost impossible to ignore you.
So, hi guys, and welcome back, everyone. Today's guest is Nizzy, co-founder of MailZero.com and the brain behind some of the internet's most approachable coding tutorials. He's built a loyal community by making both fun, relatable, and also straight to the point. He's showing that creators can also become founders. So we're going to dive into this episode and how he teaches coding, like storytelling, why community matters more than classrooms do, and what it's like to go from making TikTok to building an entire tech company. Stick around for a rapid fire at the end. So thank you for joining us today, Nizzy.
Thanks for having me.
So Nizzy, we want to start at the very beginning. So you started producing YouTube content a few years ago to make coding look fun instead of scary for beginners. For someone who doesn't know you yet, how would you describe what you do?
I'm a developer, but I guess the best way to put it is I'm a founder. I've always been a founder. The essence of a founder is someone that can constantly learn. And what got me into coding was my urge to just build things. And, you know, just looking at YouTube videos and tutorials all the time, and eventually leading into building a company.
You started posting tutorials a while back, right? So what really made you start posting these tutorials, and did you anticipate they would blow up in the way that they did?
Not really. What made me do it in the first place was that I was a beginner, and the best way I found myself to grasp this content was by teaching it to other people. The stuff I was teaching wasn't really crazy. It was just like basic coding tutorials. Like, it would be simple to any high level senior or even junior developer. But to me, the main thing I wanted out of the tutorials was that I was knowing what I was learning, and I was able to communicate that correctly. And that process just went into like this constant loop of, you know, learning new content and teaching. That made me a better developer, basically.
So is there a secret sauce on YouTube that people need to be made aware of? Because you seem to have really nailed that.
Not really. Just posting consistently, that's like the thing I found most good creators do. It applies to everything in life, to be honest, but especially with content, it's like you just have to be so consistent that it's almost impossible to ignore you. Same with TikTok, same with Twitter, all these platforms. You just have to be consistent enough, and eventually something's gonna blow up. Like, it's just a matter of time. And yeah, it's just consistency is the biggest factor here.
I think it's really impossible to miss you on Twitter, man. I don't know what you did, but every time I open my X app, you're the first tweet.
Hear. It was the strategy works. You just post content.
That's crazy. Yeah, how'd you come up with these ideas? Like, how do you decide what to tweet? You tweet every 2 or 3 hours, right? Sometimes it's just like one word that you probably just came up with like a minute before. Like, yeah. I'm curious, what's your thought process posting on X specifically, now that we talked about YouTube?
I enjoy it. I don't really see it as content. I just post what's on my mind. And luckily I have a cool following that just enjoys it. And the beauty of Twitter is once you go viral and you have like a certain amount of following and you consistently like keep posting, it compounds. So like, you might not get, like, I didn't have a following for like the first 2 years on Twitter, or like a year and a half. I was at around like 1,000 followers. Each post was getting 0 likes. Like, everyone really goes through that. But one of my posts went viral, which actually is my startup that I ended up working on. A post on that went viral. People were really interested in it. I doubled my following in a day. And I took that opportunity and ran. I just kept posting more content about it. The following kept growing and compounding. And yeah, eventually led to now, which is like, I don't know how many I'm at, but it's still like a crazy amount. Like, I'm pretty impressed with how big we've gotten. And yeah, it just came from going viral once, to be honest.
You post on both YouTube and X, and I feel like they both are different platforms at the very core. So I'm curious to know, do you have different strategies when you look at different platforms? Do you approach them differently?
YouTube is a lot different than X. Like, X is a lot easier to manage because it's real time posting your thoughts and you just put it out. YouTube is way more well thought out. It's a lot more difficult to do as well because the process is just really long. You have to think about the content you want to produce. You have to actually record the content, then edit it, which is obviously the hardest part. It's a whole thing. So you really have to, it's like, it has to be really well thought out. Well, on Twitter, again, it's a lot more casual. What I will say, though, is the Twitter following has made YouTube a lot easier. It's almost a stream of marketing because you're telling your Twitter audience, which you're a lot more personal with, that you posted something, and because they already know you on Twitter, they will check out the YouTube video somewhere or another. And if you're actually producing good content, they're going to stick around. The same goes with like business. Growing the company has been a lot easier because we have a good following on Twitter and people are just genuinely interested in what we're building. So overall, like Twitter almost acts as like a funnel into YouTube.
No, I love that. I feel like that's also applicable as a fellow content creator. A lot of times people care about the people behind products, companies. And so if they know you, they're way more likely to actually check the product out, like click that podcast link. So I totally agree with you. Since you're so active on social media, you must be having a lot of DMs, a lot of conversations with cool people. So what is the coolest DM or comment you've ever gotten from someone?
There's a content creator called Theo. He's really big in the tech community. I watched his videos religiously. I still do. He has a massive following, huge following. And one day he just DM'd me. He's like, dude, you're doing a really good job marketing your company. I honestly was like really grateful for that. I was like shocked because I'm just getting started and this very experienced guy is saying I'm doing a good job. It's like awesome. What's even better about that is when I went to San Francisco, I actually I hung out with him. I saw him multiple times. We spent some time together. It was really cool. And just seeing that going from a viewer, subscriber, paying customer to one of his products, and then being friends. We text all the time too. He even invested in the company. So it's a really cool, it's a really cool sequence of events. And honestly, it's like, it's crazy. He's a great mentor now.
That's a perfect example of how to build genuine relationships. This is awesome. I'm so curious to know, so many people start coding and then quit. I feel like I've done that a lot of times. I'll like start a project and then go off of it. As a founder, how do you keep people, not only yourself, but people around you motivated when it gets difficult and you hit these kind of roadblocks?
It's mostly about communication. We ran into a ton of blocks, even now, like a ton of roadblocks. It's just normal. It's mostly about communicating your vision. That's like the number one thing. We were going to release something. We were like, yeah, this is going to be it. This is what's going to take it to the next level. And it didn't. It actually failed big time. And I noticed the team, we're a group of 5 or 6 people now. We were a bit upset. Like I noticed the morale was a bit down. But then my co-founder Adam and I just talked to the team. We're like, hey, this is why we're doing it. This is what we plan on doing. This is the plan we have, and this is how we're going to execute it. And I think once you communicate that over and over again, they eventually understand that mistakes are part of it, and we're eventually going to hit something. But communication is like the number one thing. It's like by far and away the most important thing.
No, I love that. I feel like especially as a startup founder, it gets super hard to not just like keep yourself, you know, in spirits, but also people around you. So that's awesome that you guys have that kind of relationship. I've also seen one of your tweets where you were mentioning you guys have these like demo days, keep people engaged, like excited. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Sure. This actually came from the founder of Resend, Zeno. He's awesome. Honestly, one of the nicest people. I had a chat with him and I was like, how do you keep the company morale up? How do you keep the team tight? Because they're remote as well. And we were sort of struggling with that. And he's like, yeah, we do daily syncs where we have like a 30-minute meeting at 11, let's say EST. And yeah, we just talk about how our days went, any blockers we might have, and just talking about cool stuff. And then he's like, on Thursdays, one of the team members actually shows off something cool that they built or something cool that they learned. And so they called it demo days, which comes from YC's demo day. It's just, you know, correlation. And so he's like, you guys should definitely do that. That's how we keep the remote team sort of intact. And so like, sure, I'll try it out. And we've been doing it for a couple of weeks now and it's brought the team a lot closer. You know, sometimes someone shows off, like we have a designer, he shows off cool designs we're working on. The engineers show off maybe a cool feature that they worked on. So it's a cool way to just show off something. And it's kind of competitive too, which is great. Cause then we're like seeing who builds the coolest thing for the week. And it's good for the team. The team's a lot closer now because of it.
No, I like that a lot. I feel like it's also hard, especially when you're remote, to like know what the other person's working on. Even when you're in different domains, like I have no idea how the designer spent their time building, you know, this thing that they came up with. So I love that.
I wanted to talk more about what you're building. You're building an AI native email client. Why did you specifically choose this space to build in?
There's a couple things. First being, I like building things. So I tried a bunch of things before this. I built this like self-improvement game. We had like a fake character that you could like level up, sort of with your level up your life. I built a course platform. I built a transcriber, like an AI transcriber that like listens to your voice and then translates it into other languages. Just random things that never really took off. And eventually I was like, you know what? I find email interesting. I want to use it with AI. So I just started building it. It honestly just came from interest. I saw a few people complaining on X about not having something like this. I was like, yeah, this is something cool. And eventually one of the posts went viral. So like, okay, there's probably something here that people want to build. And the other thing is I was working at cal.com and they're doing scheduling, and obviously scheduling and emails sort of go hand in hand. I sort of took it upon myself to start building it. I was working on scheduling I figured, you know, there's other communication tools that I want to work on. So I started working on email, and that, you know, obviously led into where we are now.
Maybe you can explain us what exactly is Bill Zero and why it matters in detail.
Totally. So yeah, like you said, it's an AI native email client. I could go on and on about it, but essentially it's a tool built to save you time. We realized that email is something that's outdated. It's a 30-year-old tool that's been the same for almost that amount of time. And so we brought the power of AI into it, which simply allows you to save time in writing emails, looking at emails, summarizing and finding specific emails, almost like an assistant in your inbox.
I wouldn't personally trust an AI to write my emails automatically. So I'm sure you have people who came up to you and said the same thing, or at least I'm assuming. How do you respond to these people?
Yeah, firstly, we don't automatically write the emails. Like, it doesn't send the emails on your behalf. I think we're not there yet, but we do draft the emails, and all you have to do is like review and send. Now, on the question of composing emails and just writing in general, it's all about training the AI. You can train it to look at how you write stuff. And you'd be surprised with emails how easy it is to actually get the tone of your email, like how you write. You can have formal, casual, and then informal. There's almost like three different sections. And then there's different quirks that we pick up on. So some people write lowercase, some people write with emojis. So there's like a handful of things that we pick up on. And we just tell the AI to use that style of writing alongside a few example emails that you wrote in the past. So we may take like 5 or 6, prompt the AI for you, and then it like knows what to write for you at that point.
Yeah, so essentially you feed previous emails to the AI again, so it knows your style. Did you say that the platform was open source? Fully
yeah.
Open source? Okay, that's cool. What's the reasoning behind it being open source? Obviously, there's a lot of benefits, but I'm just curious about why did you decide to open source it?
I was just interested in the community aspect. There's a few open source email clients, but there wasn't one that's truly open source, as in like MIT licensed. And I did open source projects in the past, and I really enjoyed it. Like, I loved the community that was built from it. Like, you're working with like a cool group of people. Discord community is like really active. And the fact that you're building something cool with other people is quite fun. So that's like the main reason. The other reason is that I was already working at an open source startup. Like, Cal.com's fully open source. And I was like, you know what? Let me open source this. It'll be cool as well. I didn't even think about it. It was just like, I just did it because I'm so used to open source that I didn't even think twice. It's been a lot of fun. We have a ton of contributors, which I'm really grateful for. Again, our Discord community is really, really good. We got a ton of feature recommendations. We got people shipping all the time. A few of our first employees are from those contributors as well. So we have people that we're paying now on salary because of that. So it's a really cool sequence of events from there. But yeah, the main thing is the community aspect, which is great.
I used to also like own an open source repo at AWS. And there's one thing I used to see like over and over is we used to receive a lot of requests for new features. How do you filter the requests?
So it's mostly about having a clear, like crystal clear vision of what you want to build. Once you have that, everything kind of falls into place. You have this end goal, and you're like, does this thing fit into that vision? So I have like a crystal clear vision of what Zero want is going to be in like 5 to 10 years. And if this doesn't fit that, then there's no point in working on it. But if it does help us get there, then we'll work on it. It applies to honestly everything in life, like losing weight, marriage, everything. It's like, you have this end goal. Does this roadblock help me get there? And so that makes things a lot easier.
You mentioned you did worked on like a bunch of projects, like had some startup ideas, and you stayed consistent, like one to another, and now it's so successful. So I want to know if there's one thing you burnt through all these startups failing, projects not really turning into something legitimate, what would that one thing be?
Again, I think it's just consistency. I know a lot of people that just try one thing and they give up. I'm like, this doesn't work. I'm going to give up on the whole goal. Like, well, this startup didn't work. This not for me. But in all honesty, it's like, you just keep trying. Again, something's going to eventually work. I was never talented. I'm not even a talented coder. Like, I suck. And as soon as we raised money, I was like, we got to hire engineers because this is not sustainable. I don't code anymore. Like, I just run the company. It's just about thinking through things. I'm consistently attacking it every day. And again, something's going to stick. Like, even if you're the worst developer in the world, if you're just consistent, like, something's bound to work.
No, I love that. I think part of being a good founder is also knowing what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, and then finding someone whose strengths are better than yours and, you know, putting them in that role.
Yeah, and my co-founder, Adam, was adamant about that. I was too proud I had a lot of pride in like being a self-taught developer. And he honestly sat me down when we were in YC and he's like, dude, you cannot be coding. Let me handle the coding. We'll hire someone after. You work on the vision, you work on getting customers in, you work on marketing. And we sort of agreed that like I shouldn't be doing that. And so, yeah, it took some time to accept it, but eventually I got there.
Before we dive deeper into like what your company does, I want to go back to what you said. What's your vision for the future of Meal Zero?
It's to build like the best possible email experience for the Meal Zero side. We think the way email has been attacked via Gmail and all these other apps is just not there yet. And our main goal is to not just be another email client, but actually to be a serious competitor with Gmail and even go beyond that. What we have in mind is being the best email app in the world and being the best communication tool in the world. We really think we can do it. We have the distribution. It's just a matter of working on this and giving it time.
There's a lot of competition. It's a crowded space. What would you say makes Meal Zero different from the incumbents? I'm assuming Superhuman is an incumbent, but from other, you know, competitive players.
There's no moats anymore. Like you can build any feature someone else does. So the differentiating factors is not in, it's not in the features. Like it's not ever going to be that. It's going to be in how you distribute this and communicate this. And can you get this in the eyeballs of people? And I think that's the one thing we've done amazing to stand out. And hopefully we will succeed if the first thing people think about when they think of email is zero. Like, that's it. And that's where we're different. We have huge changes coming and we're really going to have like a differentiating features. But eventually, like people are going to copy it because they see it's going to work. So we don't really care about being different in that sense. Is just, can we distribute the product better? Because that's something that not a lot of people know how to do. A lot of our incumbents and even competitors now are older and they don't know what this new age of distribution and marketing, how that works. So that's where we have like a super strong competitive edge to our competitors.
I'm curious, how did you come up with the name? Like Meal Zero? I think that's a great name.
I don't know. It sort of just stuck. Like I like the name Zero. There's obviously like zero is like a common inbox thing. So we're like, yeah, zero sounds nice. And we kept it. Honestly, it's nothing special. I wish I had a better story, but it was just a cool name that we liked.
People tend to use the word rapper for almost anything. How do you usually respond when, you know, Meal Zero, when people describe Meal Zero in that way, a rapper over, you know, the Gmail API, for example, everything is rapper technically.
Like they're right. I mean, it is a Gmail wrapper. It's like how you see the word. I mean, I know people say it as like a bad thing, but it's not like we just copied Gmail and it's like, this is Gmail, but just different UI. Yeah, we're using the Gmail API. We're using the Outlook API. We're building our own infrastructure as well. So it's like, based on the definition, they're right. And like, there's no argument to it. It's obvious. But take like any app and they're probably a GPT wrapper. Kali is making like $4 million a month and they're a ChatGPT rapper. So if it's up to me, man, like if we're making that much money, I don't care. Call it whatever you want.
Do you see yourself in the near future, maybe like 10 years down the line, not having anything to do with, you know, these APIs? Or do you think that's even possible?
Everyone already has a Gmail account, so we're not going to like block that market. Like it's a dumb idea. So we're obviously going to support those, but the main thing is to obviously funnel that into our own infrastructure eventually. Right now, it's sustainable. We could probably grow the company into like the 7 or 8 figures a year by being over Gmail. Superhuman has shown that, and a lot of email clients have. But I think to go to the next level, you really have to build your own infrastructure so that you're completely like self-sufficient and outside of any reliance on any sort of infrastructure company. We're probably going to build our own AI. Like, that's just a matter of fact. And Perplexity's done an awesome job about that. I believe they have their own AI infrastructure, and that has caused them to be able to become the company they are and compete with Chrome and obviously Google at some point.
I'm excited to get into the rapid fire. Is we're going to ask you a series of, I want to say, fun questions, and rapidly, and just answer whatever comes to your mind first. So the first one, what do you think is the most underrated tech skill to learn in 2025?
Consistency.
So what's the biggest red flag in a tutorial?
No GitHub link.
One thing devs waste too much time on.
Setup.
So Cursor or Cloud Code? That's a tricky one, honestly.
Cursor.
One of the few remaining.
I got the pro subscription. I got the pro max. I'm paying too much.
What's your perspective on charging for information by selling courses? I know a lot of people do this, so curious.
That's fine. Not a problem. If it benefits end user, then So what?
At the end of every single episode, we like to ask our guests a very standard question, which kind of alludes to our podcast name. So through your journey from zero to the one that you are today, what is the most valuable lesson you've learned and how has it shaped your path?
It's fine to like not know what you're doing. You think because someone's successful or they're further along than you that they knew what to do to get there. But for the most part, they just tried things out. They kept trying to find what the best thing to their problem is at that point. And that led to where they were today. It wasn't because they knew what they had to do, but they learned what they had to do. So just accepting that you don't have to have the answers to all the questions to make progress is what keeps me sort of comfortable. And yeah, just accepting that things take time. And the beauty of that is when you eventually do see growth, it's the best feeling in the world.
I completely agree. I feel like that is something people need to learn more. Because when they see people in a position that they want to be in, the first thought is like, they probably had it easy. Like they probably just, it worked out, you know, not all the trial and error behind it. Thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you so much for sharing your story with us. We're super excited to share it with more people. Is there anything you want to tell our audience before we wrap up?
Just have fun. That's like the point of this. So just like build cool stuff and like have a lot of fun. It'll really show it in your like in the end result of whatever you do. You can tell when someone's like enthusiastic, and that's like goes for the company you build or the content that you make. If you show that you care, you will really go a long way.
Okay. Thank you, Nizzy. Thank you so much. So for anyone tuning in, whether you're learning your first line of code, posting your first TikTok, or thinking of starting a company, this episode is proof you don't need to wait to begin, and you definitely do not need to have everything figured out. So thank you, Nizzy, and really happy to have you on this episode.
Thank you so much for having me.